The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, shootout special. At the World Cup, England's women thank Nigeria's misses as they reach the quarterfinals. At Wembley, Arsenal find something Fabio Vieira's good at as they finally beat Man City from the spot. We'll be running up those games and talking about Liverpool and why Klopp needs to shop and Salah's salivating Saudi salary. And we'll be catching up on the opening weekend's events in the Football League. It's all coming up in this Totally Football Show. It appears to be Monday the 7th of August. Listen, I'm not sure how things are date-wise with you, but very much the start of a brand new week and pretty much the start of a brand new season as I'm joined by Raphael Honigstein. Fit and healthy again, Raph.
Hello, James.
Nice to see you. And also Jay Harris with us.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you, Jay. How about you?
Very good, thanks.
And on the screen, we're tuned to the sounds of Adrian Clark. Hello, Adrian.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, just got in from the post-match celebrations last night, winning the Community Shield. It was mad one.
Right. You were at Wembley.
Yeah.
And we've all just witnessed last 16 action from down under, with England going through on penalties against Nigeria.
This to send them through to the quarterfinals. Kelly smashes England through!
Jay, did you enjoy that?
I enjoyed the penalties.
Yes.
In the sense that they were very stressful, but it's always good just seeing that high drama. I don't think the game was... It was a high-quality game, but Nigeria did really well to kind of cancel out England. And then obviously Lauren James's red card, which I'm sure we'll get onto, kind of completely...
Let's do it now.
Completely changed things.
What happened?
Just a very, very silly decision from Lauren James. Perhaps some of that naivety. She's a very young footballer. This is her first major tournament. Really disappointing for her to end her match like that. She's been so important for England. 3 goals, 3 assists at this tournament, a real shining light. And so that abiding memory that she came very close to costing her team dearly, I'm sure she'll be in that dressing room right now thanking all those players for bailing her out. But she stepped on Michelle Alozie. I think it was very clear that it was done deliberately. Everybody straight away saying it had echoes of David Beckham in 1998. But yeah, luckily, England kind of managed to kick on with 10 women and managed to pull for in penalties.
Although that's probably it, I hear, for Lauren James's participation in the tournament. Because if it's violent conduct, that's a 3-match ban. And, you know.
And if that is the case and she doesn't appear for the rest of the tournament, it's a real shame because it felt like this tournament was kind of really in the grip of her hand. I think everybody would agree that she's been the shining light of this tournament, not just because of the goals that she scored, but the quality of the goals she scored. The way that she kind of, you know, she wasn't even a part of the Euro squad last year, if I remember correctly. So the way she'd kind of come in and so quickly become an integral member of that England team, you know, she was fantastic against China, playing behind Lauren Hemp and Alessia Russo. So for England to lose that magic will be a big, big miss. But I think she really struggled with Ayinde from Nigeria kind of following her closely throughout the entire game, essentially like man marking, woman marking her. And that clearly frustrated her. And I think that's what led to that silly decision.
I think in an interesting way, the red card changed the momentum psychologically because Nigeria was sort of winning the game. Their game plan was working. They were frustrating England. They looked the better team. When the momentum was supposed to shift towards them doing more with the ball, they couldn't quite do it. And England reaching the penalties was their success with that player down. And I think you saw it a little bit in those penalties.
Yeah, you need to talk a bit less, I think, Raph. I can hear the vocal cords.
It's just my new voice for the new season.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's quite exciting.
Thanks. I knew you'd like it.
Yeah, I love it. Adrian, what were your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, obviously it was a petulant moment of madness from Lauren James. Real shame. I think she was just a little bit frustrated by the one-on-one marking. She had very little space in the game, hadn't had any impact. And it's just daft, isn't it, these days? You can't do anything that isn't going to get captured on camera. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see the reaction in the media, actually. If you know, we know what happened to David Beckham. We don't want to see a repeat of that. But it'd be interesting to see how hard people go in on.
Well, England staying in presumably will ameliorate
a difference.
It should do. It should do. But it's a heavy price for her to pay personally because she had potential to be the player of the tournament, didn't she? But yeah, overall, it wasn't a good England performance. I think a lack of pace, a real lack of pace was evident at both ends of the pitch, really. I'm a huge fan of Alessia Russo. Her movement, her touch, she's really silky. She's a good finisher. But up against some really powerful athletic defenders, didn't really make any headway. And then at the back, those passes down the sides of the three centre-halves, just every single time Nigeria got in very, very easily. And I think that's a little bit of a concern moving forwards into the latter stages. I do think defensively England look a little bit shaky.
First time England have failed to score in a World Cup game in 17 matches. Jay, next up, they'll be facing either Colombia or Jamaica, who'll be facing off on Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. UK time. You wrote a lovely piece for The Athletic, strangely enough, about Jamaica and their remarkable journey to these World Cup finals, including the role of Bob Marley's family in that.
I won't call it a lovely article because it was stressful. It took took many weeks to get over the line.
Why was it so stressful?
Just because the chaos that the Jamaica women's national team or the reggae girls have had to put up with over 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years is just, it's quite remarkable that they managed to qualify for the 2019 World Cup, that they've qualified for this World Cup and that they've reached the knockout stages. But essentially, for a long period of time, the Jamaica Football Federation has not really... well, it hasn't provided them with the necessary support. So Bob Marley's family come into the equation because I think it was in 2014, Sadella Marley, who is Bob Marley's, I think, eldest daughter. She runs Tough Gong Records, which I thought was kind of cool. But anyway, she basically comes on and is an ambassador for this, for the Reggae Girls. But she actually puts a lot of her own money into the team. So they had a pre-tournament camp for this World Cup in Amsterdam at Adidas's headquarters. And from what I understand, Sadella paid or contributed significantly to that pre-tournament camp, which obviously raises questions as to where and what the Jamaican Football Federation are doing with their money. There have been two fundraising campaigns. So one was set up by the Reggae Girls Foundation. One was set up by Havana Salawan, who's a midfielder for the Reggae Girls. One was set up by her mum. So Sadella Marley's contributing to the Reggae Girls. You've got two separate fundraising campaigns contributing to the Reggae Girls. And this is all to help them with transportation, accommodation, nutrition, food. It just raises questions as to why they're not being supported properly. So for them to have reached the knockout round, first Caribbean side to reach the knockout stages of a major tournament is phenomenal. And the fact that they did it when Bunny Shaw, their best player, their talisman, was suspended for one game as well, is even more remarkable. So if they can go one step further and beat Colombia and set up a England v Jamaica quarterfinal with a lot of, you know, geopolitical history around it, I'd certainly be quite intrigued and entertained by the prospect of that.
Well, we'll see if Jamaica can get through against Colombia. Could it be one love? Any scoreline will do to take them through to a clash with England. Meantime, Rafa, Germany, what happened to them?
They were terrible, Germany. I mean, they had that wonderful result against Morocco, of course, which got everyone's hopes up and people thinking, okay, Germany are really forced to be reckoned with. But you could see already in the game against Colombia, which they lost, unfortunately, in the last minute of injury time. But still, there was a real problem generating clear-cut chances from open play. The story repeated itself against Korea Republic. And Germany had one idea, which is to put high crosses towards Alexandra Popp, and it worked quite often, but it's not really enough to go deep into the competition, and nerves kicked in for this team. And it was one of those really strange situations where I think a team are seen as favourites because of what they did at the Euros, but deep down they knew things weren't actually that great, because even before the Euros, there was a huge question mark how good they were. Then they got into this rhythm, got these results. Everyone thinks, okay, fine, we're good again. Then you have a really indifferent 6 months leading up to the World Cup. Lots of problems, but people thinking, somehow it's going to be fine again when the tournament starts. But actually, it wasn't. And some of that insecurity, some of that nervousness, you could really see in the team, even though they talked themselves up saying, yeah, you know, we're playing for the World Cup. People are afraid of us again, as Alexander Popp said. I'm not sure they 100% believed it themselves. And you could see all the problems. You could see all the shortcomings in this team. And for me, I think a lot of it is down to the way that they were coached. The German FA don't seem to be thinking the same, because Martina Voss-Tecklenburg seems to be staying in the job, as far as we know. But I think they were coached very badly, especially if you include the World Cup 4 years ago, which up until that date was their worst World Cup. Under the same manager, now they've worsened in terms of their record.
All right, worst ever
outcome.
Ranked number two in the world coming into this tournament, they're out. Team ranked number one coming into this tournament, the holders USA, also out after another penalty shootout, and a penalty shootout with a particularly dramatic end. Adrian, did you enjoy that? The millimetric decision-making on that final penalty?
Yeah, it was dramatic, wasn't it? It was pure theatre. But it was just over the line, wasn't it? And yeah, it was. I felt for the US keeper, but her protests were obviously in vain. You can't keep complaining when the technology shows. It doesn't matter how close it is, but if it shows it's over the line, it's over the line. It was not the most glorious way for the States to go out, but it was the right result because the ball was in. But yeah, I think this tournament is really brilliant, actually, with these unexpected results, because, you know, the strength of these underdog nations has been remarkable. Mm-hmm. It really has. You know, the countries that have been specialists for so long, the originals, so to speak, are really finding it tough against these emerging nations who are finally getting a little bit of funding. Finally, you know, there's some resources there. And we're seeing some really good football and some good tactics as well. You talked about Jamaica, Nigeria, excellent tactical approaches from both those teams. And the team that's impressed me most, by the way, is Japan. I just like that they seem to have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, really, really well organized. They seem ready for everything, and they're not reliant on one star player. Maybe Germany were too reliant on an Alexandre Pop, but for Japan it's the polar opposite. I think they might take some stopping.
There you go. Japan will be facing Sweden in the quarterfinals.
Just on the US, I think there's been a lot of talk at this tournament about how they're kind of trapped between two generations, because you've got these younger players coming through, Sophia Smith, Trinity Rodman, who I thought was probably the US's best attacking outlet against Sweden. But I mean, what a way for Rapinoe to end her World Cup career.
Wow.
I think she's taken 23 penalties in her life, scored 21, had a penalty saved 5 years ago by a keeper, but she'd never missed a target before until that crucial moment yesterday. So what a way to kind of bow out of your international career like that.
A sick joke. That's how she described it.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, anyway, more on the Women's World Cup, out every day in the Athletics Women's Football Podcast with Michelle Owen, every match day, that is. Next up on this Totally Football Show, Adrian, let's hear about your trip to Wembley.
Hey there, Totally Listener, it's me, Tim Spears, and I'm here to tell you about the Daily Football Briefing. It's out every weekday, telling you exactly what you need to know from the world of football from those who know the game best. Start each day with David Ornstein telling you why Arsenal are signing that player, or Liam Toomey explaining Chelsea's latest baffling move, or Rafa Hoeneckstein bringing the biggest Bundesliga antics. It's all there in under 15 minutes. The Daily Football Briefing, available now and every day from wherever you're listening to this podcast.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
The young Portuguese attacking midfielder up against Ortega. Vieira to win silverware for Arsenal. Sounds familiar, and that's exactly what he's done.
Sunday afternoon at Wembley, of course, was the Community Shield. Man City against Arsenal, 1-1 after a regulation time, and Arsenal going through after a penalty shootout. Adrian, you were there. First of all, terrific day for the Gunners. Why did it mean so much for them?
I think it's pretty clear why it meant so much. Obviously, there's a little bit of payback there for last season, Manchester City sneaking in there. But it's more a case of Arsenal have been so abysmal in matches against City in recent years. I think they'd lost 9 in a row prior to this one. I think that the only previous victory had been at Wembley behind closed doors in the FA Cup semi-final. So yeah, it was about getting a little bit of revenge, I think, and putting some silverware on the table, even if it is only the Community Shield. So no, it meant a little bit more to Arsenal than Manchester City. I think you could see that at the end. But it was an even game. It could have gone either way. Arsenal's equaliser was obviously fortuitous. But the fact that it was an even game and that Arsenal were very competitive, particularly strong at the back, not really giving them too many opportunities, I think it represents a real step forward, because Pep Guardiola has always found a way to slice through the Gunners in recent times. So yeah, I was pleased with what I saw, really.
Okay, it's the third season in a row that City have lost the Community Shield. The last two campaigns, of course, haven't gone too badly for them, even without that. But that notion of Arsenal closing the gap with the likes of Havertz and Rice coming in, a lot of focus on their performances. Rafa, what did you make?
Yeah, I thought Declan Rice was good. He struggled in the beginning when Arsenal had very little of the ball. As he dropped deeper and Arsenal found ways to play through the press, then he looked more impressive. Still one or two moments where I think he has to probably raise his game a little bit. Arsenal's passing is much better than West Ham's. There's much more expectation of somebody in his position not just to be a defensive runner and tackler and shield for the back four. He has to actually play a lot. And we'll have to see him, I think, develop and grow into that player. But he's got the potential for it. Havertz, I wasn't that impressed with him. I think he can do a job there, and on another day he scores a goal and we think,
or does he?
Well,
he was trending on social media during the game, so I was kind of looking to see what the verdict was, and it was very much a Schrodinger's cat performance, because half the people out there had him, oh, he's been magnificent, and then the other half were posting memes of him missing goals and saying no receipts. But yeah, a lot of Chelsea fans.
I'm not sure anyone can really say he was magnificent yesterday.
A lot of people did.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he was okay. He had 2 chances. Both of them weren't easy because the balls into him weren't perfect. He had to do a lot of work, especially with the first one. And the second one, unfortunately, was on his weaker foot. And Stones, I think, got a very crucial tackle in, which then slowed the ball down, made it easier to save. But I think he would be much more of an asset if he can play off a centre forward.
Right.
And that's where my one concern about this Arsenal team is, I think they're still, for all the progress that they've made, they're still very reliant on A, having Gabriel Jesus or anyone really up front, and Saliba at the back. I think as soon as one of those two factors isn't there, then they might struggle a little bit. But as an Arsenal supporter, I'd be hugely encouraged, because you can see that this is a team that functions, that understand what they're supposed to do. They can really play on a similar level than Man City, even though Man City weren't at their usual level, I think we have to admit.
Mm.
And in a league where you feel a lot of the bigger sides are still somehow in transition, or they're not quite at their best for whatever reason, with Arsenal you get the sense that they can do what they have done last year, but maybe a little bit better. And I think that's why Arsenal fans are very happy at the moment.
Okay. Havertz, I noticed, wearing the iconic number 29 Arsenal shirt, Adrian, which you've actually got one on your wall right behind you with the name Clark above it.
Yeah. I didn't get to wear it as often as I'd like to have done.
Right.
Yes, that's right.
Where did you stand on the thorny Kai controversy?
Yeah, he's going to divide opinion, I think, for sure. Probably because of his body language and the fact that he came from Chelsea as well. And I agree with Rafa. I think he was fine. Like, it was an okay performance. There were some good bits, some not so good bits. The chances weren't that easy. I would much prefer him in the space behind, absolutely. But it was a case, I think, of Mikel Arteta just looking, just taking a look and thinking, well, I know what Eddie Nketiah can do. I know what Leandro Trossard can do in that role because he's covered it before as well. Let's chuck Kai up there and see how he fares. And I thought he took to the role with a degree of relish, but yeah, he's not the long-term answer. And I have to say, it's getting to the point where I really would, and I think most Arsenal fans would like the next purchase, maybe beyond David Raya, we'll probably get to him shortly, the next purchase or loan to be a striker, because I think Balogun and Nketiah maybe aren't the answer long term, and for their careers they probably need to play and be regular somewhere else as well. So I can see that spot being filled before the end of the window.
Okay, what about City then, who opened the scoring through Cole Palmer, who'd come on for the shotless Erling Haaland, another quiet season in prospect for the Norwegian, probably on the basis of that performance. Cole Palmer, though, who's having quite the year, under-21s winner, also answer to the quiz question, Premier League players named Carlton.
Cole Palmer?
Yeah. No?
No. I know of Carlton Palmer.
there was a Carlton Cole as well, famously.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that went over.
No, that's all right.
No.
That's fine. But, magnificent goal.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Cole Palmer. I watched the England under-21s play a couple of games back in March, and I thought he's a really good player. And it also struck me immediately that he's that good that in any other team other than maybe Man City, he probably plays loads and loads and loads more. But with City, you know, selling Riyad Mahrez, I think there's definitely an opportunity for Cole Palmer because that's his preferred position on the right-hand side, cutting into that left foot. We saw the quality of that goal yesterday that he's got everything to his game. So good at close control dribbling. And so I think he's probably at that point in his career now where I think he's just turned 21. Mm. So he kind of needs to kind of kick on. So this should really be the season where Mahrez has left, an opportunity's opened up. It'd be interesting to see if he can take it.
The stats around Erling Haaland, meantime, as I say, didn't have a shot during the game. Only 13 touches, was the fewest of any player on the field. Obviously, we've seen stats like these overshadowed by the other big stat that he usually produces. But given the departures in midfield, which Joe was just touching on there, is there a potential issue there, do you think, for City? Or is this just the same nonsense that we talked this time last year?
I don't see any issues for City. On. I mean, the one problem they might have is maybe motivation.
Uh-huh.
Once you win everything, to go again. Guardiola is very intense, very demanding, and I think he will be the key factor for them not slackening off. But I think maybe for the players deep down, it's going to be hard to start, okay, we've just done it, now you have to do it again. You know, you go to Burnley or whatever, and it's just, oh, you know.
Mm.
But that's the only thing I can think of when it comes to not tipping them as champions again.
Burnley on Friday, of course, for City in their opener. Adrian?
I think Phil Foden's part in that goal was really important for him. Obviously, he didn't start the game, did he? Which I was a little bit surprised at, but he came on for Jack Grealish, who'd been marked really well, I've got to say, by Ben White. And so he turned Thomas Partey, didn't he? Thomas went to steam in on him. He got turned. And because he was on a yellow card for a silly kicking the ball away early on, Thomas Partey couldn't pull him down in the way that Rodri had been tactically fouling throughout the game. He couldn't get away with it. And I thought it was a brilliant sort of pre-assist from Phil Foden. I just think with the departure of Gundogan and Mahrez, it's got to open the door for him, hasn't it? To have a lot more starts. And when he does start, he normally either scores or assists or does both, doesn't he? So I think he could be, even though he's been around years, he could actually be a little bit of a new difference maker in the first 11.
Like a new signing. What about the actual new signing, which has it actually gone through now?
Yes.
Josko Gvardiol. Rafa, you've seen him in action a lot for Leipzig. Thoughts?
Huge talent. Not quite the finished article, which perhaps if you spend 90 million euros, you'd want him to be. But
Oh, is it that much?
Yeah. Probably second most expensive centre-forward ever.
Centre-back?
Centre-back, sorry. Mm. Yeah. He's got fantastic skill set, ability, left-footed centre-back there at a premium as well. Really fast, great on the ball, of course. Otherwise, City wouldn't be looking at him. But yeah, still one or two things to improve upon. His one-to-ones, I think he needs to strengthen. You saw that Messi got the better of him at the World Cup, even though Guardiola shouldn't really be beaten for pace, but Messi with his trickery found a way through him or around him. But I think we saw what Guardiola, especially in recent years, has done with, shall we say, more orthodox centre-backs, giving them perhaps less to do in a way, with the exception of John Stones, of course. And I think he's going to be a fantastic addition. Another reason why City have really found more balance, because they're just putting more and more defensive players on the pitch than ever before. And they're just very good at defending. That's it. And Guardiola's going to be one of them.
In Europe's top five leagues last season, the only defender to play more passes per game than Guardiola was...
John Stones.
Well, actually, it was Ruben Dias, but close.
Yeah.
Ooh, Leipzig, though. A lot of players have left them this summer.
A lot of players have left, but they've also bought lots of interesting players. Šeško's come in from Salzburg. Luis Openda. From Rennes, I think.
Strasbourg?
Lens,
that's it.
From Lens. They've bought Nicky Seiwald from Salzburg. He's a really good player.
Okay. What of the players who've gone? So you've got Guardiola to City, Nkunku, who's gone to Chelsea, and Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai. And Andre Silva has gone on loan.
Oh, yeah.
To Spain. Yeah, it is a transition for them. I think Nkunku is the one that they'll miss most, because he brought something very special, and he's the kind of player that will score and do things even when a team doesn't play well. And that is invaluable. And you can see already, I think, in Chelsea, one or two moments that he can do things with the ball that very few other players can. It's going to be, I think, great, really exciting seeing him in the Premier League next season.
We mentioned Cole Palmer scoring the opening goal, and then we had the equaliser from Trossard, which took that deflection off Kanji.
Double deflection,
was it? And so we went to penalties. And anything you want to say about those spot kicks, Adrian? The lovely save from Aaron Ramsdale.
They were quality pens, weren't they?
The
Arsenal
ones,
Emirates Cup when they played Monaco, and they spanked five unstoppable penalties into the net that night. So, yeah, they've obviously been practicing pretty hard. And it was nice, I think, for Ramsdale to get the moment where he saves one, because obviously he's been in the news. Well, for a couple of reasons, obviously with that piece that he did, which was really sort of heartwarming. And then with the speculation over the David Raya signing, all eyes are on him really to see how he's going to react to that. So, yeah, by and large, even though there were one or two wobbly moments in the game, I think by and large he comes out of it with credit. And it was nice for him to sort of get that acclaim at the end by saving a pen, because I don't think he's really noted for his spot kick prowess.
What is the situation with David Raya, and why are Arsenal signing him?
Well, David Raya has been one of Brentford's best performers over the last couple of years. Signed him in 2019 from Blackburn Rovers, and their debut season in the Premier League, a lot of people talk about Christian Eriksen's arrival as kind of being the turning point when they were wobbling a little bit. But actually, I'd say it was more David Raya's return from injury. Everybody knows that he's a good shot stopper. He was very great at catching as well. His distribution's immaculate. The link up between him and Ivan Toney has been essential for Brentford over the last couple of years in the Premier League, because we know that Brentford do play quite direct. Situation is, Brentford obviously wanted to keep him, and they'd offered him two new contracts over the last 12 months that would have made him one of the best paid players in the club's history. He rejected both of them. I think Brentford were very wary of making sure that they didn't completely smash their wage structure to keep Raya. And, you know, in the past with Ollie Watkins, Saïd Benrahma, they've been prepared to let players go if it's the right price. And that's where we've come into a little bit of a, I think we can call it a transfer saga at this stage with Raya's situation. But at the end of the season, all of the noise was about him going to Tottenham. You know, Thomas Frank very publicly said that there was a £40 million price tag on Raya, and that he was not going to leave Brentford unless that was paid. Tottenham obviously didn't want to pay that. Tottenham end up signing Vicario instead. Then we had all this noise about Rea potentially going to Bayern Munich on loan, but that was really dependent on Rea signing a new contract at Brentford because he only has a year left. And obviously the risk with that situation is if Rea had moved to Bayern Munich and signed this new contract and it hadn't worked out, then we would have been in this exact same situation next summer. So now it seems like a move towards Arsenal is edging closer. And the historic link there is that Iñaki Cano, who's Arsenal's goalkeeping coach, was at Brentford and was a big reason behind Brentford signing Rea in the first place. I hope you're still with me.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of why do Arsenal want to sign him, I guess that is the million-dollar question, because Ramsdale had a pretty good... Well, he had a very good season last year.
It's a bit like when Ramsdale himself came in and everyone thought that Arsenal was sorted with... Jay Leno, but Burn Leno.
But obviously, the difference with that situation was that everybody knew Ramsdale was being brought in because he was far superior on the ball than Leno.
Okay.
Whereas my argument would be, I don't know how much of an upgrade in that regard David Rea is.
Okay.
And you're obviously shelling, I don't think the deal will go to £40 million, but maybe high 20s, 30s. That's a lot of money for only a marginal improvement. But then when you're talking about, you know, 1 point or 2 points or a couple of losses or a draw between determining whether you win the title or not, maybe that outlay is necessary for Arsenal if they want to take that next step.
What if Aaron Ramsdale, you know, does his ankle ligaments tomorrow? What's, you know, or goes into 50-50 and comes off second best and he's out for 3 months? It's that scenario, isn't it? And I think that Mikel Arteta's just seeing this as an opportunist move because of the... I think he probably expected Rea to go to Tottenham, but he's thinking, well, Rea's checked out of Brentford. He has really, hasn't he? Mentally, I think he's out. We could swoop in here and get ourselves into a position where we've got two really good goalkeepers that push each other over the course of a season that should, in theory, drive up standards. And let's face it, if Ramsdale got injured tomorrow and there was no David Rea, it's Matt Turner as the backup, I think Arsenal's stock, say he was out for the season, Arsenal would go from being title contenders to in a battle for top four. I think that's how big the drop-off is. But with David Rea, it isn't. So I think it's covering bases. Hopefully they'll push each other. And look, I think for a season, it can work. Where they, you know, they share game time to a degree. Maybe one gets the Champions League and whatnot. I don't know how they'll work it out, but they can have a shootout and maybe the best man wins over the course of a season and we'll see what happens. But it's a funny one because it's unusual to have two stellar number ones battling out. But as an Arsenal supporter, it's quite reassuring.
More good news. More good news.
Unless it destabilizes your existing number one.
Oh dear.
Who starts thinking, don't they rate me anymore? Why do I have to now fight for my spot? And goalkeepers are, I think, a little bit different. They're not like centre backs, centre forwards who understand that there's a constant competition. I think, without knowing Ramsdale personally, some keepers don't like to have the sense that they're always on edge, that they have to watch their back.
Right.
So I don't know if this is not a bit of a risky strategy.
Okay. Is Rea destabilised? Do you know him from your Brentford?
He's a big character.
Yeah, he's a member of Brentford's leadership group under Thomas Frank with Tony, Pontus Janssen and Christian Norgard last season. I know Adrian said that he's checked out and, you know, he's been on the bench and, well, he was on the bench for their pre-season game against Lille on Saturday. He didn't play much. I think he got 145 minutes while they were out on tour in the US.
Mm.
I spoke to Thomas Frank on Saturday after their final pre-season game and Thomas Frank made it very clear that he thinks David's been fantastic in every aspect, were the exact words he used. But I do think Rea's made it very, very clear there's no... A lot would have to change for him to have any sort of future at Brentford. And I mean that in terms of... Brentford have already signed Rea's replacement, Mark Flecken. He's got the most game time in pre-season. You know, Rea has made it very public in the media, including with myself, that he feels like he's ready for the next step in his career. And he said that, I think he told the Times back in June, that Brentford need to let me go. So it would have to be a hell of a turnaround for him to suddenly play for the next year for Brentford. But I just think he's in a strange situation because I was chatting to Rafa about this before we came on air, but if I was in Rea's shoes, I'd be asking myself, what move do I need to make to give myself the best possible chance of starting for Spain at the European Championships?
What would your answer be, Jay?
Well, I think he needs to play in the biggest games,
Yeah.
Which is why I understand that playing 38 games for Brentford is big, but he needs that experience of playing in the Champions League, of playing in the Europa League, of battling for a title,
right,
in order to kind of get that step above Unai Simon and Robert Sanchez. Is he going to get enough of those experiences playing for Arsenal where he's competing with Aaron Ramsdale? I think the answer's no. But he can't really stay at Brentford for another year for the reasons I've just outlined. The Bayern Munich loan, I think, could have worked, but it looks like that option's not going to happen. So I almost feel like Rea kind of has to take this move to Arsenal, because otherwise he's not going to play at Brentford, but then I don't know how much he's going to play at Arsenal. I just think it's a little bit messy. And I think at the end of the season, I don't think Rea and Brentford may be expected to be in this situation a week, well, not even a week, 5 days before the first game of the season.
Yeah, fair. Loads more Brentford content, courtesy of your good self, via the excellent How Brentford Work. What's the official title of
Access
the...
Access All Areas Brentford.
There you go.
Yeah.
Much nicer than my How Brentford Work. By the way, that game that you saw them against Lille the other day,
yep,
who was featuring in that game?
Aaron Maluda. And
son of Florent.
Yeah. So it was one of those ones where I thought, surely not. And yes, the 17-year-old son of Florent Maluda.
Extraordinary. All right. Next up, we're going to be talking about the club who this time last year was celebrating a Community Shield win and looking ahead to a really great season. Liverpool. I think it's going to go better for them this time. James Pearce is up next.
Hello, I'm Ayo Akinwoleri, new host of the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll take you inside the biggest stories from the world of football, told by the best journalists in the business. People like Adam Crafton, David Ornstein, Matt Slater, and a heap of amazing club writers from all across the globe. Our promise? To cut through the noise and tell you what's really happening and why it matters. So listen to the Athletic Football Podcast, Monday to Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
All right, everyone, time to talk Liverpool. Woohoo! Last year's Community Shield winners, which they followed with a very underwhelming season and a fifth-place finish. The Athletic's James Pearce joins us now. Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you guys? Okay?
Pretty good at this end. Rafa's bearing up. You were off in Singapore with Liverpool. How was that?
Yeah, it was a good trip. I think Klopp seemed very satisfied with what they got out of it. You know, two games, an emphatic 4-0 victory over Leicester, and then you know, a really enjoyable 4-3 thriller that they ended up on the wrong side of against Bayern Munich in front of nearly 50,000 people at Singapore's National Stadium. So, yeah, it was a real mixed bag in terms of the kind of, when you look at Liverpool in terms of the shape they're in, because going forward, they were electric, lots to admire, but really, really vulnerable out of possession, and Bayern Munich took full advantage of that.
There's, I mean, loads of questions from listeners about what kind of season it is in prospect for Klopp's side. Asim saying seven players out, only two players in, with a week before two away goals against direct rivals in Chelsea and Newcastle. Are Liverpool planning to be just Vibes FC this season, if they're indeed planning anything at all? Dan Ogoshakin says, how have Liverpool gone from being arguably the smartest run club in European football to what we're seeing now?
Yeah, I can understand the concern amongst a lot of supporters that I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks, because I think things have changed fast, because rewind probably 6-7 weeks and Liverpool were getting congratulated for being decisive in the transfer market, getting some really important business done early with Alexis McAllister and Dominic Szoboszlai, two real high caliber recruits, which was always the priority, having lost Milner, Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain at the back end of last season. And then, what really threw a spanner in the works was this interest from Saudi Arabia. Jurgen Klopp had no intention of parting company with Jordan Henderson as captain or Fabinho as holding midfielder. And I think where that concern stems is Liverpool haven't yet plugged those gaps. And the most glaring one is the Fabinho-shaped hole in that holding midfield, while Liverpool don't have a genuine number six who's fit to start against Chelsea. And that is a real concern. Stefan Bacetic, really gifted young player. He's missed all the preseason through injury, only just started training again. He won't be ready. Thiago is in the same position. So Curtis Jones has been playing as the number six. And, everyone knows that is not his natural game.
How likely are they to get a substitute in the short term?
I think there's no doubt they will sign a number six. The problem has been they've been in this, what has now turned into a bit of a saga with Southampton over Romeo Lavia. Mm. He's the one that they've pinpointed as the perfect recruit, but Southampton's stance hasn't changed all summer. It's 50 million. And Liverpool made pretty clear early on, they thought that was, extortionate for someone who's only played, I think, 35, 36 senior games in his career, only one season, in senior football with Southampton, who obviously ended up getting relegated. So two bids have been rejected so far. I think the latest one was rising to 41 million, but that included the add-ons. So there's still a bit of a gap there. And so far, Liverpool, I think, they were quite happy for it to be known. They were looking at alternatives. And I think there was a bit of a game going on there in terms of hoping that might force Southampton's hand to accept a lower fee, but Saints have stuck to their guns. So Liverpool are going to have to make a decision pretty fast. They either pay what Southampton want or they go and get someone else in, because it really could cost them in the opening weeks of the season not having, a specialist in that position.
In terms of interest from Saudi, this Monday morning, a lot of talk of them coming in for Mo Salah, which would be extremely worrying for a lot of Liverpool fans. What's your impression of the likelihood of that, or the likeliest outcome there?
Mo Salah won't go anywhere this summer, no chance. His agent has come out today and said that they wouldn't have signed the new contract last summer, the new 3-year deal that made him the highest paid Liverpool player in history, if he had any intentions of walking away this summer. So no, I don't think that's one to worry about. I think, despite some of the eye-watering sums of money being bandied around, and there's reports in Saudi that they'd be willing to pay Salah £155 million over 2 years. But no, he's a man who's very, very focused on keeping on rewriting the record books at Anfield. At the age of 31, he's showing no signs of slowing down. 30 goals in all competitions last season. He wants to fire Liverpool back into the Champions League. I think it hurt him as much as anyone, dropping out of Europe's elite. So, it wouldn't surprise me if we see Salah in Saudi Arabia in a couple of years' time, but no chance this summer. Liverpool, he's so valuable to them. Yes, they've got an array of attacking options now, but he is still the main man.
Okay. Ruud Lang says, any thoughts on Ben Doak and the season ahead for Liverpool? He looks incredibly exciting, exclamation mark.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. He absolutely lit up the two games in Singapore, and such an exciting young player. He does remind me a little bit of a very young Wayne Rooney in terms of just how fearless he is, and just, and he just keeps on going and going. It's hard to believe he's still only 17. Joined the club from Celtic, loads of promise in his first year at the club. But yeah, you speak to Klopp and his coaching staff and they absolutely rave about Ben Doak. And he's learning from the best in the business, really, with, right winger learning his trade from Mo Salah. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think, it's probably a decision to be made there in terms of, do you loan him out? I hope they don't. I hope he stays around, because I think certainly the Europa League group stage would look to me as a perfect stage for him to flourish, and also a fantastic option off the bench, because, if you're looking for someone to come on and make something happen in the last 10, 15 minutes of a Premier League game, he's you know, he's got a bit of magic to him, Bendo. Kind of, yeah, really excited about his potential.
Brilliant. What kind of season do you think then in prospect for Liverpool? How real are the chances of them breaking back into the top four?
Do you know, I think it's so difficult to make predictions at the moment, Liverpool-wise, because there's unfinished business in the transfer market. I think if they go and get Romeo Lavia and they go and bring in another centre-back, because I think that's the other concern when you speak to fans, is Van Dijk and Konate make a great combination, but I think there's too much of a drop-off when then you have to turn to Joel Matip and or Joe Gomez. I think they need another centre-half. So if they address those two areas, then, you know, I've got no doubt Liverpool will be back in the top four and potentially pushing higher than that and challenging for the big prizes again. Because certainly when you look at the firepower, I don't see another team around that can match Liverpool for firepower. When you look at, you know, you've got Diaz or Jota on the left, you've got Gakpo or Nunes through the middle, Salah on the right, showing those signs of slowing down. That is really, really exciting. It's just, they're still, for me, two players short to be able to predict with any great degree of certainty that this season is going to be significantly better than the last one.
Brilliant. All right, James. Well, we'll be able to keep updated on your thoughts and those of the Walk On podcast every week from The Athletic, covering all things Liverpool. Many thanks for joining us though today.
Cheers, guys.
Liverpool, their campaign beginning, as we mentioned earlier, away to Chelsea. Ooh, one or two other things to talk about from around the wide world of football, including the entirety of the Championship, League One and League Two, summed up in the space of about 5 minutes. That's coming up after this.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Another Inter Miami game overnight. Not sure if you caught any of this. 3 in the morning UK time, did you, Raf? No? They were playing FC Dallas. FC Dallas went 3-1 up. Adrian, were you across this?
Well, I was across it because my daughter is absolutely football mad. Yeah, and she's only 7. But she's into YouTube, which I'm trying to get her off of. But This morning on the feed...
Yeah.
Was highlights of the Miami game, and she put them on, and we all watched them together. And Messi was just ridiculous again. He must be still in his 20s, right?
In his 4 games so far, he's had 7 goals and 1 assist. He got 2 in this game, including a magnificent free kick, which brought it back to 4-4 about 5 minutes from time. And then he scored his goal in a, guess what, penalty shootout to take Inter Miami through. This was in the League's Cup, which is a tournament which is between...
Not as prestigious as the league itself.
The League's Cup?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how US fans would feel about that. But anyway, that's what's going on with him. Harry Kane scored a hat-trick for Spurs against Shakhtar on Sunday. Any news, Rafa?
Was it even 4 goals?
Did he get 4?
I saw somebody got 4.
He got 4. Okay, update. Harry Kane got 4 against Shakhtar. Boom. Yeah. Any update, Rafa? Is time running out?
Time is running out if he indeed wants to have a decision before the season starts, because that leaves us with this week. I'm sure Bayern would love to have a decision earlier. They tried to force the issue a little bit over the weekend.
Right.
With
an ultimatum.
Success. I don't know if it was really an ultimatum, but they wanted to have an answer. Ideally, they didn't get an answer. So they're going to keep trying.
Okay. Adrian, excellent What the EFL preview of the various divisions and the campaigns ahead for them. What were the headlines from the opening set of matches then?
Yeah, thanks, James. Some good games, some really good games. In terms of the headlines, I guess League Two had one of them with Wrexham getting hammered really 5-3 at home to the MK Dons. Hugh Jackman was there alongside his buddies Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, and yeah, it didn't go well. Didn't go well for them at all. So that was pretty big news. Leicester came from behind to beat Coventry in the sort of Midlands derby around my neck of the woods where I live. And it was Keenan Dewsbury Hall who got the brace. And you just wonder, don't you, whether they'll be able to keep a player like him, because he's definitely Premier League quality. Personally, I hope they do keep him. He gives them that year, because I think if he stays and a few of the other big guns that are still remaining, then Leicester might just be the team to beat. Elsewhere, Barnsley beat Port Vale 7-0. Biggest opening day victory since 1962 for any club.
Really?
Quite remarkable, really. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the goals, it is a crossing masterclass. I think five of the seven came from unbelievable 9 or 10 out of 10 level crosses. So as a former winger, absolutely loved Barnsley's work at the weekend.
Three goals scored by one man. Who was he?
Yeah, Devante Cole. Yeah, son of Andy Cole. It was a day of son of. Obviously, we've had one earlier. For Stoke, by the way, who I think blooded 9 signings in the game. They beat Rotherham 4-1. A 16-year-old came off the bench, Sol Sidibe, son of Mama Sidibe, who was at Stoke for many, many years. So it just makes you feel stupidly old, doesn't it, when things like that happen?
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? All right. Colchester had a game rained off. It's August.
Did you see one of their players? I think it was from the dressing room. Did a rendition, was it, you know, they did a song.
He did.
And it was world class. What would I do without your smile, man? Drawing me in and you kicking me out. You got my head spinning.
No kidding, I can't pin you down. He did a John Legend song. It was, as you say, world class. We were actually playing that back before this show started. I ventured the opinion that if you do, he's a new player, I think. It was his induction song. Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. I felt that it's against the spirit of the induction song to get up and be really good or do a song which showcases your vocal abilities. Rafa, by contrast, offered Thomas Tuchel with his induction song for Bayern Munich doing, what did he do,
Macho,
Rafa?
Macho, macho. Macho, macho, constant and macho, macho,
macho,
macho,
Macho, macho.
German version.
Macho, yeah, macho. Which is more my kind of thing. Yeah, Adrian, of course I have to ask, what did you do as an induction song?
No, it wasn't a thing. It wasn't a thing back then. No, absolutely got away with it. So, yeah, don't know how.
What song would you do?
Oh, I don't know. But I think James is right. I think you've got to not take it too seriously. You've almost got to be deliberately bad.
It's like karaoke, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm looking at Jay because Jay was magnificent in karaoke when we had it. We had a Totally Football Show karaoke night. Raf, you weren't there.
I wasn't there, no.
Yeah.
It would have been unfair if I'd done it.
Yeah. That'll be available as a separate podcast, though, soon. Jay was really good.
Thank you. I think you were better.
No.
I was doing the comedic. So for people listening, I did Shaggy, It Wasn't Me, with my good friend
Liam.
That wasn't
comedy.
It was to me.
Was it?
Yeah, it was. It was the easy option. It was, you know, I'm going to do this laughing at myself so others don't laugh at me.
No one was laughing when
That's good.
I liked it. I was devastated because Jack Lang just ruined my rendition of Neil Diamond. My mic wasn't working very well and all I could hear in my ears was Jack absolutely killing it.
That was producer Charlie on the mics.
It wasn't great.
What's that, listener? Enough karaoke news? Yes, indeed. What happened over the Football League, Adrian? Anything else from this weekend?
Watford QPR stood out for me because QPR obviously started last season really well under Michael Beale.
Uh-huh.
Things really went wrong when Neil Critchley took over. Gareth Ainsworth kind of just about steadied the ship and they just avoided relegation. So you're almost thinking from their perspective, had a summer of change. Les Ferdinand's no longer technical director or director of football. Can't remember what the exact title was. So to lose so comprehensively on the opening day of the season would suggest that absolutely nothing has changed another season of real struggle.
Mm.
Yeah, the other one that stood out for me was Norwich. They came from behind to beat Hull City, but they absolutely destroyed them by all accounts. They looked really, really good. And it was the first time, I still find this stat ridiculous. It was the first time they'd scored at Carrow Road since February.
What?
Which is just bonkers, really. And the goal came from a kid called Jonathan Rose, come through the academy, and he is tasty. He is a really, really good player, and a lot of the Norwich fans that I know think he's going to be big. So, yeah, it could be a name to remember, Jonathan Rowe.
All right. And what happened to Leeds this weekend under Daniel Farke?
Yeah, they came back from 2-0 down to draw at home to Cardiff City. So not the ideal start for them. They've got a very young side. that Farker put out. And if these kids stay and they stay hungry, which they should be because they're young players looking to make a name for themselves, I think Leeds could be a really exciting team to follow this season. So, yeah, even though they drop points, I think there's quite a bit to get enthused about if you're a Leeds supporter.
They had quite a jammy equaliser from Somerville in the last minute of extra time where I can't remember who it was, but somebody shot, bounced off someone's leg. Somerville's falling as he hits this volley and it sneaks into the corner. But actually looking at the stats, they had 25 shots and 72% possession. So fair play to Cardiff because, yeah, a little bit of a back to the wall job. But then I guess that maybe speaks to how dominant Leeds could be under Farker this season.
Wow. It's a long road ahead, of course. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us today. It's where we come to the end of today's Totally Football Show. You'll be available, though, on not only the What the EFL podcast, which will be out sometime Tuesday, I guess, but also the Arsenal podcast, Adrian. Handbrake
jump
off?
On it now.
Are you?
Handbrake off.
Yeah.
It's me, Ian Stone, and Art DeRoche of The Athletic. So, yeah, just about to kick off with that. That'll be out later on Monday.
Wow, with this Art DeRoche, you're spoiling us, Adrian. Very good. Look forward to seeing you again soon. Many thanks to you, Rafa, and you, Jay, and you, producer Charlie, and you, listener. We return on Thursday. So I do hope you'll be with us as well. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.